After a couple of weeks of dozens of verses from Matthew's gospel that emphasize the dark and hard side of life for those who claim faith in Jesus as followers of Jesus, being sent out like sheep in the midst of wolves, taking nothing along but the good faith that others will receive you, facing the prospect of being hated for the status quo reversing good news that you bring, trying to overcome falsehood with truth and opposition with courage, facing down bullies, recognizing that Jesus' way will first bring as much division and opposition as it brings any settledness or peace, even division and opposition from within your own family, taking up your cross to follow Jesus and losing your life to find it. After all of that, it seems like this morning, with these closing verses of chapter 10, we are finally in some safer territory, some more familiar and pleasing territory. After all, the call to extend a welcome is familiar territory for us. It feels like good news finally, without all the more difficult, conflicted stuff mixed in. But right off the bat, things aren't as simple as they seem. Because if we look at it carefully, we will see that this call to welcome is not about you as Jesus' disciples welcoming others. It's about you being welcomed. And that shouldn't surprise us because, after all, it's at the very end of this whole set of instructions that Jesus is giving his disciples before he sends them out. So it's not about welcoming others into your territory, but about seeking a welcome, hoping for a welcome, as you take Jesus' message out into the world. You are going out into the world, Jesus tells his disciples. And this is what is going to happen. Difficult encounters, opposition from those you meet, good news rejected because the good news you bring doesn't uphold the status quo, but advocates for those on the margins of society. This is what is going to happen. You won't get full support, even from those in your own family, because when you are labeled as a troublemaker for challenging the way things are, the unjust and insensitive systemic realities and patterns of your society that keep certain people from getting the healing they need, then not only are you a troublemaker, but you are dragging the reputation of those close to you into the same risky places. So, expect opposition. But recognize this as well, he tells them. If you are welcomed, then those who welcome you will be rewarded. If you are welcomed, then those who welcome you are welcoming me, is what Jesus says. Don't forget this very critical connection, this identification. Those who welcome the ones who bring the good news of the upside-down kingdom welcome not only you who bring that news, but they also welcome the one who first and always proclaims it. That is, they welcome Christ. Now, this is important because to be the ones who welcome, which is the way we typically think of ourselves, is to be the ones who decide, is to be the ones in power, is to be the ones in control. Welcome to my space. Come on into my space. Let me offer you something. Let me make a place for you in the midst of my familiar environs. To be the ones who welcome is our familiar posture, our comfortable place of control. But to be the ones who stand at the door knocking, not knowing whether we will be received or not, is a much different story than the one we are used to. To be the ones who wait to be welcomed is a much different story. To be the ones who wait for a space to be made for us is a much different story. Because it means that we are the ones risking rejection. We are the ones who don't know what to expect. We are the ones then who are treading into foreign territory. We are the ones who have to proceed with caution. We are the ones waiting to be welcomed. Here's the thing. If we take seriously our calling to be the ones who bring good news, to welcome those whose lives are lived on the edge, those who constantly live in the shadow of uncertainty, of rejection, then shouldn't we be willing to live in such places too? Diane Roth, a Lutheran pastor writing for the Living by the Word column in the Christian Century magazine, recognizes that Jesus never intended for his disciples to be at the center of society, but rather at the edges, bringing this great treasure of the good news of healing and restoration to the weak, the oppressed, the sick, but also needing a welcome in order to be able to give that good news. She says that this makes her distinctly uncomfortable. She writes, "Jesus' words make me realize that I have a privilege his early disciples did not have. I have power. I have the power to welcome others or to turn my back. Jesus' words also make me uncomfortable," she continues, "because I realize the distance between those disciples and me. Maybe Jesus never meant for us to be as powerful as we are. Maybe he meant for us to be the refugees, the ones needing assistance. Maybe from these places, from places of vulnerability, we can give a more powerful witness to the power of God's love." And with that, she concludes with these couple of questions. If we are not in the position of having all the goods, of being able to welcome people, who are we? If we are not in the position of power, if we are not rich and in the center, where everyone looks for meaning, who are we? I have to agree with her uncomfortableness. And quite honestly, I think I'd like these verses in today's text to be a bit more, or I would find them a bit better, if they were just telling us to be more welcoming. But I don't think that's the message. I think the message in this text isn't about us saying to others, "Come on in," but rather for us to ask, without certainty, without power, without privilege, without guarantee, "May I come in?" If last week was truth and courage, maybe this week is humility and vulnerability. Because there really is a difference in inviting someone onto your own turf, into your own space, under your roof, versus humbling yourself enough to knock on their door, ask for their welcome, hope for their hospitality. Jesus isn't sending out his disciples in order to dominate. He's sending out his disciples in order that they might bring, through their relinquishing of power and self-sufficiency, a message of humble hope, of willingness to sacrifice their independence so that others might be empowered, a message of turning things upside down so that things might be put right side up. It's setting aside the illusion that we are the masters of the house, and instead recognizing that we are all sojourners in this world. My wife and I live in a house with a couple of teenagers, at least for the rest of this summer. It is a house for which Lois and I pay the mortgage using her salary, and we pay the utilities, the insurance, the household expenses, all the incidentals using mine. In that sense, it is our house. But in our house, our children have their rooms. When they were little, the doors to those rooms were almost never closed. We all moved in and out, at least during the day. At night, in order for there to be the quiet and darkness needed for good sleep, the doors were closed, but only then. In more recent years, the doors to their rooms are almost always closed. If they are in their rooms, they close their doors. And I have to admit that it kind of bothers me to walk past a closed door during the day or into the evening. The barrier bothers me. The implicit message, "don't come in," bothers me. I find that I don't like having to knock, but I do. I don't like having to wait until I am beckoned in, but I'm trying to do that as well. It's not a big deal, really, but I like to have the full run of my own house, as I confess I think of it. But I also know, deep down, that it's not a bad thing for me to have to ask, "May I come in?" It's not a bad thing for me to have to wait to be invited, to be welcomed. It's not a bad thing to be reminded that it is not only my space, but it's somebody else's space. It's not a bad thing to relinquish some more of my power, my privilege, for the sake of these little ones, as Matthew might call them. Not because they are tiny people, they certainly aren't, but because they have a smaller amount of control over their environment than I do. I read a social media post recently written by a black man who had a package delivered to his house by accident. UPS delivered it to the wrong address. The package was meant for a house a block over from his. At the time of the post, they were waiting for UPS to come back and pick up the package and re-deliver it. "Why not just take it to the address a block away himself?" a well-meaning person asked, "or send his teenage son to drop it off. Wouldn't that be the neighborly thing to do?" "He can't risk it," the man says. "It's unsafe to send his black teenage son to another person's home in a predominantly white neighborhood, even in broad daylight. It's just too dangerous. The risk of being unwelcome isn't just the risk of being turned away, it's the risk of violence." I think about that, and I realize that mostly I don't think about that. Being unwelcome to me means being turned away, not being attacked or threatened. Being unwelcome to me means having my feelings hurt, not my body threatened. I realize I need more practice, more education in the matter of being welcomed or not. I need more practice in the risk of knocking on the unfamiliar door and asking, "May I come in?" I need more practice in learning to be on the humble end of welcome. But at the same time, I don't need to put the burden of my education on the shoulders of those who already suffer. I need to take my own risks. I need to offer myself in uncertain settings. I need to knock on the doors of my opponents, for example, and risk the rejection of my request for mutuality. And I think I will learn more about being welcoming by practicing asking for welcome than I will ever learn by just offering it from the insider position. I need to offer welcome, of course, but it won't teach me nearly as much as being on the other side of the door. It's interesting, as I think over the years of people who have welcomed me, who have thrown open their doors, their lives, even when I was a stranger upon arriving on their doorstep, even when we didn't speak the same language or share the same culture, even when they had few resources but were nevertheless extravagant in their hospitality, those people have stayed embedded in my heart and in my memory far longer and far more deeply than just about any other persons. Being welcomed when you didn't expect to be welcomed, being included when you didn't think you'd be included, being embraced when you did not expect the embrace, being fed when you didn't bring anything to the table yourself, being honored as a guest and not treated as an inconvenience, being allowed into someone else's private and personal space for no other reason than you needed a place to rest for a moment, being given a place to lay your head or wash your face, being accepted even when you did not feel acceptable, being assumed to be trustworthy when you haven't yet had a chance to prove it, being welcomed like that, it touches you. When you are vulnerable and someone gives you gentle care, it touches you. When you are on the outside and someone lets you in, it touches you. It feels like God caring for you, doesn't it? It feels like Christ is present, doesn't it? It feels a little bit of a miracle, doesn't it? When I have only myself to offer and you accept me anyway, you welcome me, there is no doubt that you are doing the work of welcoming Christ himself. Yes, because Jesus said it is so, but also because any kind and merciful space or shelter offered to God's children is space and shelter offered for Christ's presence as well. I started my part-time work at Timbercrest on Saturday, just yesterday. I'm assisting people who need assistance at mealtime and helping with the outdoor visiting program. I don't really need another job, part-time or otherwise, but I want to help in a difficult time, and I would like to have the opportunity to see some people I wouldn't and haven't been otherwise able to see. But it's a strange thing. I used to go into Timbercrest on my own schedule and visit whoever I chose to go and see. Now I go when they tell me. I go where they tell me. I wait to be checked in. I do what I'm told. I wait to find out who I will see and who I will work with. I have something to offer, but I can't impose it. I just offer it, and I wait for the door to be opened. It's different, but it's good. I think I'm going to learn a different side of things. Maybe it is that way for you, too, in these uncertain and changing times, taking a few more steps away from being in control, a few more steps toward being humbled, a few more steps toward the rewards of mutuality, hospitality, respect, relationship, and understanding. A few more steps into the gift and opportunity of giving and receiving that cup of cold water. And the good news is that no matter how hard it is to let go, to stand outside, to be the one knocking instead of the one answering, in all of this, Christ will be present. Christ is present in every act of welcome. Welcome given and welcome received. Amen. Please join me for some moments of silent reflection and prayer.